We need to talk about mitosis and meiosis specifically, and more generally about the cell cycle. And I'm told these are topics you've already covered in lecture. So you can demonstrate how much you've learned to me then. The cell cycle is really an entire cell's lifetime, right? The cycle starts when a cell is created because a previous cell has split into two, and that cycle then ends when that cell itself splits into two. The overall cell cycle has two major components. What are those? No. First of all, I said two. Close. I'll accept interphase. That's one. No? The mitotic phase, or the M phase, is the second one. But each of those can then be broken down, right? So there are three components to interphase, for instance, which are what? G1, S, and G2 in that order. No, you said G1, G2, and S.
Well, not in different order, but still.
Well, I'm giving you the correct information. G1, S, and G2. You can then break down the mitotic phase, which is kind of, it's obviously named for the fact that it includes mitosis, but the mitotic phase is not mitosis. The mitotic phase is mitosis plus cytokinesis. And what is mitosis? No. That's not what mitosis is. Mitosis is division of the nucleus. And meiosis is as well. That doesn't make you two cells, of course, right? That makes you two nuclei. Which is why you need also a division of the cytoplasm. And that's what cytokinesis is. So those are the primary subdivisions of the M phase, right? Mitosis and cytokinesis. Mitosis itself, though, you can break down even further, right? Into five phases of mitosis.
Why do they make a distinction between mitosis and cytokinesis and make it the mitotic phase?
Well, that's why I was saying it's kind of confusingly described. The M phase is named for the fact that it includes mitosis, but the M phase is mitosis and cytokinesis, and the reason those are distinct is because mitosis only divides the nucleus. If that's all you have happen, then now you have one cell with two nuclei. In order to split everything that's outside of the nucleus, which is the cytoplasm, you need the other process occurring as well, cytokinesis. And sometimes, depending on the species and the situation, you will have one cell undergo just mitosis and not cytokinesis, and therefore have a...
Can you get a multinucleate?
Yeah, you can. And that happens, for instance, in plants when they produce their central cell that becomes fertilized along with the egg. That's a cell that has two nuclei to begin with and then gets another batch of DNA to become a triploid cell. So what are these phases of mitosis? No, cytokinesis is not part of mitosis. But the other ones are the phases of mitosis. And now overall, DNA has two major jobs. What are the two jobs of DNA? No, it's not involved in making proteins. Proteins are assembled on ribosomes, which is outside of the nucleus. DNA is not around. What do we call that? Specifically. What is DNA's contribution to that process? Well, if you were trying to describe DNA to a kindergartner, what would you say about it? Okay, and what does that mean? That's what it means to be genetic? Well, you just said it was genetic. What is it that's special about DNA? In a sense, you're saying that it stores information, right? It is a code. Well, the answer to my question, what are the two jobs of DNA, really is the same thing as asking, what are the two reasons that we read the code? What are the two processes in which we read the DNA code? Transcription is one. That's one of DNA's jobs. Translation does not involve DNA, and that's when the protein is actually synthesized. Okay, but of course you need transcription before you have translation. Anyway, that's one of DNA's jobs. What's the other one? It's the other time that we want to read the code. That's not an event. When what? That's not when we're reading codes. What is the other time that we have to get in there and look at the nucleotide sequence in order to do something? That's the one we've already mentioned. Transcription is one of DNA's jobs. Transduction is a way for bacteria to get new DNA. That's an unrelated process. Exactly. That's the second job of DNA, replication. Well, two reasons you go in there and look at that sequence is to either make a transcript out of RNA or to make a new DNA molecule, right? And those are reflected in the two major parts of the cell cycle. Where is DNA replicated? In the S phase. That stands for synthesis, right? Synthesis of new DNA. That's way before mitosis. You already have two copies made, and you have to go all the way through G2 before you even get to mitosis. So mitosis is not replication of the genome and division of the nucleus. It's just division of the nucleus. Replication already has happened back in S phase. It's what is replicated is a new nuclear envelope for each of the two nuclei that get built, but the DNA has already been built. Right. Yeah, S phase is when replication occurs. And now the G1 and the G2, the so-called gap phases, those are bad words as well because it implies that nothing is happening there. Well, G1 is really the lifetime of that cell.
All the molecules in
protein. Not all of them. No. But G1, though, is the normal lifetime of that cell. Whatever kind of cell it is, it's busy doing its job of being that kind of cell during G1. It's not thinking about its descendants. It's just busy being a liver cell or whatever kind of cell. Right? By the time you get to S, then that cell is about to end its own life by splitting into two new cells, right? The first thing it needs to do in order to make those two cells viable so that they each have their own DNA is to replicate the DNA. That happens in S. So all kinds of transcription is occurring in G1 to make the proteins that are required for being that type of cell. Then in S, the genome is replicated. Then in G2, transcription of other genes is taken place to make the proteins that are required for splitting into two, for undergoing the M phase, in other words. All right? Now, Let's also get through some definitions here. What is ploidy? What does that mean? P-L-O-I-D-Y. Anyone know? Ploidy refers to how many of each kind of chromosome a cell has. And that's totally different from the number of chromosomes a cell has. Those are two different things. Okay? For instance, using humans as an example, a human cell has how many different kinds of chromosomes? 23. 23 different kinds of chromosomes in a human cell. What symbol do we give to the number of different kinds of chromosomes a cell has? What variable? N. N is not the ploidy. N is the number of different kinds of chromosomes. Okay, each chromosome contains a separate batch of genes that govern a different batch of characteristics. All right? So the ploidy is how many of each of those different kinds a cell has. And that's when we use words like haploid or diploid to tell you the ploidy. A diploid cell is one that has two of every one of the different kinds. So in other words, the diploid condition is symbolized as 2N, because you have two of every one of them, 1 through N. You have two of them, two number 1s, two number 2s. That's what makes it diploid. Having only one of each of one of those means that you're a haploid cell. Okay? Mitosis, importantly, does not change the ploidy. Whatever the ploidy is of the cell that enters mitosis, the two that are created have the same ploidy as the one that started it. But that's not true for meiosis. Meiosis reduces the ploidy. It cuts it in half. Okay? Now, if we think about the sexual life cycle of a species, whatever sexual species, including animals, plants, fungi, there is a generation-to-generation alternation, a going back and forth, between two important processes, one of which is fertilization. Now, fertilization is what? How do you define fertilization?
I had a teacher who said it was like sperm, egg, magic.
Well, there's nothing magical about it. But a sperm and an egg are involved. What are sperm and egg examples of? They're gametes. They're sex cells. Fertilization in general is the union, the fusion of two unicellular haploid gametes to produce one unicellular diploid zygote. So you start out with two cells, you end up with one cell. That one cell, though, because it now contains the DNA of both gametes, has double the ploidy compared to the gametes, right? The zygote is diploid, whereas the gametes were haploid. Now, if that were the only process that's occurring from generation to generation in a sexual species, then every generation you would double the ploidy again. The next generation you'd have four. It would be tetraploid, then octoploid. You would be doubling that amount of DNA contained in that tiny, tiny nucleus every time. And that obviously would get out of hand very quickly. There's just no way you could do that. So since fertilization doubles the ploidy, and that's important because that's part of, I mean, that the essence of sex is to make as much DNA variation as possible. Since fertilization doubles it, a sexual species also needs a process that's going to cut it in half. So that by doubling it, cut it in half, doubling it, cutting it in half, you're always staying the same from generation to generation as far as amount of DNA in cells is concerned. Okay, that other mechanism that cuts it in half is meiosis. So any given sexual species is going to undergo fertilization, then meiosis, then fertilization, and so on from generation to generation. All right? Now let's look at some pictures to describe the important events in mitosis and meiosis. Mitosis, a lot easier to understand. Meiosis confuses the hell out of people for the first few times learning it. Let's get a firm grip on mitosis to begin with, though. Now, mitosis can occur for a cell of any ploidy. Like I said, it doesn't change it, but you can. A haploid cell could enter mitosis, a diploid cell could, or any other ploidy for that matter. This leftmost picture is not yet in mitosis. Notice that it's labeled G2 of interphase. G2 is after the S phase, though, so this cell already has twice the amount of DNA that it needs. It has enough DNA to be two cells. Replication has already occurred. Now, the yellow things that are outside of the nucleus here are centrosomes, and they are, each centrosome is going to be where a new nucleus is going to form. But before the DNA replicated, there was only one centrosome there. So in addition to the DNA in the nucleus being replicated, the centrosome also gets replicated so that there are now two. They're still next to each other at this point. And we don't have any chromosomes here yet, because we don't use the word chromosome until the material that chromosomes are made out of is really well condensed, and you can see it as a distinct structure. Right now, you don't see any distinct structures in there, right? By the way, what is the material that a chromosome is made out of called? Chromatin is the stuff of chromosomes, right? But at this point, all we have is uncondensed chromatin, so we don't use the word chromosomes yet. All right, now we're out of G2 and we're in the first phase of mitosis, prophase. Notice that the chromatin has started to condense. So we're starting to see individual chromosomes, although they're not as small as they're going to be, because they're going to continue to condense until metaphase, when they're the smallest. But we start seeing actual chromosomes in prometaphase. We also see formation of the early mitotic spindle. Each centrosome is a microtubule organizing center, and microtubules grow out from each centrosome. They start pushing on each other, these microtubules do, and that pushes the two centrosomes to opposite ends of the cell. So we see that polarization, movement apart of the two centrosomes during prophase. The nuclear envelope is still intact, though. And that's going to be a problem, because the mitotic spindle, which is outside of the nucleus, needs to interact with the chromosomes, which are inside the nucleus. So when we go to prometaphase, the next one, notice that the nuclear envelope disintegrates, and no longer is there a barrier between the mitotic spindle and the chromosomes. These chromosomes, by the time you see them and you actually are calling them chromosomes, are already replicated, because they've already gone through the S phase. So each one of these is, even though it's considered to be a single chromosome, these are all replicated chromosomes consisting of two identical sister chromatids stuck together at a centromere, right? On either side of that centromere is a place called a kinetochore, which is an attachment point for certain ones of these microtubules that are making up the mitotic spindle. There are, even though all the microtubules are made of the same stuff, there are two categories of them. Non-kinetochore microtubules, which are also called polar microtubules, and kinetochore microtubules. Kinetochore microtubules connect to kinetochores. A kinetochore microtubule from one pole, from one centrosome, will connect to the kinetochore on one side of a replicated chromosome. Another kinetochore microtubule growing out from the other pole will connect to the other kinetochore on that same replicated chromosome. Okay? And those kinetochore or microtubules are going to be roadways along which these chromosomes are going to go their own way toward one pole or the other. So, in prometaphase, you have the connection between the kinetochores and the kinetochore microtubules. Metaphase is next, and notice by the time you get there, the chromosomes are as small as they're ever going to be. They're maximally condensed at that point. But what really defines it as metaphase is that it's the brief period during which all of the replicated chromosomes are lined up, midway between the two poles. Then the split occurs. Anaphase is a splitting event, whether we're talking about mitosis or meiosis. But what splits is different in the two processes. In mitosis, what lines up in metaphase are individual replicated chromosomes. And what splits apart are the two sister chromatids that used to be stuck together to make up that replicated chromosome. Well, the moment that occurs, once you have chromatids no longer connected to each other, we don't use the word chromatid anymore. Now they are chromosomes in their own right, but each one is just an unreplicated chromosome because it's only enough DNA for just one cell. And they're going to opposite poles, but they're identical to each other. So by the time you get these things reaching the end, which is what telophase is, you have two aggregations or groupings of chromosomes. One grouping is identical to the other, and therefore the two nuclei that are going to form, which is another part of telokinesis, you have a nuclear envelope occurring around one group and a nuclear envelope occurring around the other. Two nuclei form. Each of those nuclei, though, is genetically identical. But like I was saying before, that doesn't get you two cells. You still have to divide the cytoplasm. And that's what cytokinesis is about. We're looking at an animal cell here. You can tell that for a couple reasons. One is that the centrosome contains a centriole. This T-shaped thing is the centriole. It's inside the centrosome. Animal cells have centrioles. Plant cells don't. They both have centrosomes, but the centrosomes of plant cells don't have these centrioles. That's the other reason. The cell wall in a plant is a lot tougher than the plasma membrane. A plant cell has a plasma membrane, of course, as well, like all cells. But an animal cell having only the plasma membrane is a lot more pliable on its surface, so cytokinesis is really just a matter of pinching it off. What really happens is that there's a ring of tubules inside that act kind of like a belt that just cinches it off. It goes through belt loops on the interior surface of the plasma membrane and creates those cleavage furrows, which is just a ditch, right? And once that gets small enough, you have two cells that are identical to each other. They're identical to each other genetically, but they're also identical to the one cell that split into these two. So that's what mitosis is all about, making new cells. That's how you came to have roughly 10 trillion of your own cells, starting out with the one zygote you began as, right? By mitosis. And because it makes genetically identical copies, that's why all of your cells have the same DNA in them. Okay. That's mitosis. Let's compare that with meiosis now. One major difference is that meiosis involves two divisions, whereas mitosis only involves one. So we divide the whole meiosis process into meiosis I and meiosis II, and therefore the subphases get a Roman numeral as well, prophase I and prophase II, metaphase I, and so on. Now, sex mixes up DNA. That's sex's major contribution to evolutionary history, is that it drastically increases the amount of genetic variation by shuffling the deck, basically, really. Now, that only works if you have some variation to begin with, right? If you shuffle a deck that's 52, 10 of diamonds, they're all identical, you can shuffle it as much as you want. Everyone's going to get the same hand, right? So you have to have some genetic variation to start with in order for sex to work. What is the original source of all that genetic variation? What causes new versions of DNA to occur in the beginning? Yes, mutation is the original source. Once you have some variation, sex can amplify it. And there's three ways in which sex does this. Two of which occur in meiosis. The first is crossing over. Second is independent assortment. And the third is random fertilization. All right? And that's the order in which they occur. The first to occur, crossing over, occurs in prophase 1. Prophase 1 is much different from prophase of mitosis. Because in prophase 1 of meiosis, first of all, this is definitely a diploid cell, not a haploid cell. It wouldn't make sense for a haploid cell to enter meiosis, because if you have only one of each chromosome type, you can't cut your ploidy in half. Right? You have to work with only integers. So this is a diploid cell coming into prophase 1, and therefore there are two number 1s, two number 2s, and so on for however many there are. In this cell, what is N? No, in this cell that we're looking at, what is N equal? So that's the same question as how many different kinds of chromosomes are in this cell? Did you look at the picture? In that cell. That's not a human cell. Well, this is a standardized test, so you're not allowed to put two bubbles in for your answer. There are three different kinds of chromosomes here. Exactly. N is three. The three different chromosomes are large, medium, and small. But this is a diploid cell, so that means there are two of each of them, right? So the overall cell is symbolized as 2N. That's the diploid condition. If N is 3, that means you have a total of 6 chromosomes. 2 number 1s, 2 number 2s, 2 number 3s. All right? Now, the huge difference between prophase 1 of meiosis and prophase of mitosis is that in meiosis, the two number 1s find each other. The two number 2s find each other, and so on through N. The two number 1s in mitosis don't care where the other one is. Each individual replicated chromosome is just doing its own thing in mitosis. But in meiosis, the two number 1s find each other and come together. That coming together is called synapsis. We say that the two chromosomes synapse. And when they synapse, that's when crossing over can occur. Now, the two number 1s are said to be homologous. The two number 2s are homologous to each other. And so on. But each one of these, which is called a homologue is already replicated, right? So a homologue contains two identical sister chromatids. The other homologue, the other number 1, is also replicated, and it contains two sister chromatids that are identical. But those chromatids are not the same as the chromatids in the other homologue, because they came from different sources. One came from the father, one came from the mother. Okay, they're not the same DNA. When crossing over occurs, two non-sister chromatids, one from one homologue and one from the other homologue, in this case a red one and a blue one, cross over at some place and then trade what is beyond that point with each other. So blue gets swapped for green, for red, and vice versa. What do we call that place where they cross over? It's called a chiasma. That's the singular. Chiasmata for plural. And those are circled right here. So, once you have crossing over occur, you now have a brand new chromosome that didn't exist before, because that's not like the father's DNA or the mother's DNA. It's a combination of both. And because a DNA molecule, there's one DNA molecule in a chromosome, because it's millions of nucleotides long, there are that many ways in which, places where a chiasma can form. And therefore, the number of possible combinations of DNA by crossing over is ridiculously huge. It's effectively infinite.
Can it happen at like more than one place on the...
Yeah, and that makes it even huger. So you're really multiplying hugeness by itself many times to make it nearly infinite. And this is the major reason why a male, for instance, human, produces millions of sperm every day and does so for several decades. So that's a lot of millions of sperm over one lifetime. But there's so many possible ways crossing over can occur that the chance of making the same sperm twice in a lifetime is almost zero. Every sperm that one individual makes is different from all the other sperm that individual makes for his whole lifetime. Which is why you don't have twins occurring a year apart from each other, even though the same two parents are reproducing. Okay, so that all happens in prophase one of meiosis. In metaphase, this is really important to understanding the difference. Something lines up, just like in metaphase of mitosis, but what lines up in the two is different. Notice that what's lining up here in metaphase one of meiosis are what we call tetrads. A homologous pair, we can call it that. You can also call that homologous pair one tetrad. Tetrad simply means a four-piece thing. The four things are the four chromatids involved. So this is one tetrad, this is one, this is one. Well, that's not what lined up in mitosis, because in mitosis, the two number ones didn't care what each other was doing. Right? There are no tetrads in mitosis. So in general, how many things line up if you have a diploid cell entering mitosis? In general, what symbol would you use to say how many things are lining up? How many? Three? In general. Not knowing what species it is. 2N. In mitosis, if it's a diploid cell entering mitosis, there are going to be 2N things lining up. Right? Because the paternal number one can be here, the maternal number one is somewhere else lined up individually. In meiosis, N things line up. They're N tet. No, they're not haploid. This is a diploid cell. To have a tetrad, you need to be diploid, because there needs to be two of that same type of chromosome to make up a tetrad. Okay, since different things line up in meiosis versus mitosis, that means it's also different what splits apart. In mitosis, remember that the two things that split apart in anaphase were the chromatids that were stuck together. Not happening here. In meiosis, the tetrads divide, which means one homologue goes its one way and the other homologue goes the other way. But each one is still replicated. Still consists of two sister chromatids. Now, once you have that split, and you consider now two groups of chromosomes going in opposite directions, this group of chromosomes is already haploid. And this group of chromosomes is already haploid, because there's only one of each type. Right. So, that's another important thing about meiosis. Not only does it reduce the ploidy, but that ploidy reduction occurs in meiosis 1, not in meiosis 2. All right? Go ahead.
So, both of the ones that are lined up are the two number ones?
Yeah, these are the two number ones, two number twos, two number threes.
Okay,
and at that moment, you have a diploid condition.
Okay.
because there's two number ones, two number twos, two number threes. But now that they've split apart, this group of chromosomes is haploid. There's only 1-1, 1-2, and 1-3, and the same for this. And we're treating them separately because they're going to be in their own cells once you have cytokinesis occur. Now, what did I say the second major source of amplified genetic variation in sex is?
Independent assortment.
Assortment, just by itself, refers to how a tetrad lines up at metaphase. And using this cartoon version, the two possibilities are red up and blue down, or blue up and red down. Well, the phrase independent assortment refers to the fact that how one tetrad assorts is totally independent from how all the other tetrads assort. In other words, each one is its own flip of a coin to see which one goes up and which one goes down. In other words, it's not all red up and all blue down or vice versa. It's on a tetrad by tetrad basis. And this also amplifies the genetic variation because one cell is going to get a totally different batch of DNA compared to the other cell, depending on how they assort. Right? One cell is going to get mostly the maternal version for one chromosome, whereas the other one will get mostly the paternal version, depending on how much crossing over has occurred, and so on down the line for all the chromosomes. Well, if you consider just an N of one where you only have one chromosome, there's only two possibilities, right? Head or tail. If you have two, there's a head or tail for each of the head and the tail on the second one. So it's two times two possibilities, two squared. In general, it's 2 to the nth power number of ways in which you can randomly or independently assort. So for humans, with an N of 23, there's 2 to the 23rd power number of ways in which tetrads can line up. And that's roughly 8 million, which seems like a big number, and it is. That means just because of that alone, just because of independent assortment, you can make 8 million different kinds of eggs or sperm, depending on whether you're male or female. But 8 million is practically zero compared to the number of ways in which crossing over can occur. The thing is, you already have that ridiculously huge number from crossing over, and then you multiply that by 8 million to take into account both of them. So that gives you a number of possible sperm that's way more than you're ever going to make in a lifetime, which is why you don't end up making the same one twice. All right? So what this really amounts to in the cards analogy is that because of crossing over and independent assortment, you have a huge deck of sperm cards and a huge deck of egg cards, equally huge, right? Random fertilization, the third process, means you randomly choose one card from the sperm deck and one card from the egg deck. And since each deck is so huge, can you imagine how many there are ways that you can choose two cards? Namely, it's the number of cards in the one deck multiplied by the number of cards in the other deck. So it's practically infinite. That's why sex works so well. But now let's think back what's happening at the end of at the end of meiosis one. We have already reduced the ploidy, but we still have replicated chromosomes. And that's why we need that extra division event, meiosis two, to do really the same thing that mitosis does by itself. You still have chromosomes that have two sister chromatids, you need to split those apart. So that's what happens. Meiosis 2 is really just mitosis for a haploid cell, because you already have haploid cells. What lines up at metaphase 2 is the same thing that lines up at metaphase of mitosis, individual replicated chromosomes. Tetrads don't make any sense at this point because the other homologue is in a totally different cell by this point. So individual replicated chromosomes line up. They are already different from each other because of crossing over an independent assortment. But then what splits apart, same thing as in mitosis. Sister chromatids split apart and become chromosomes in their own right, unreplicated chromosomes. Just like mitosis, the ploidy doesn't change when that happens, so it is still haploid. It started out haploid right here when you enter meiosis II. You create a total of four cells that will become the gametes. And those four cells are haploid, non-identical to each other. They're all distinct genetically. And, of course, they're genetically distinct from the one cell that these originally came from. All right? So that's meiosis. If we just quickly compare the two in this third slide, you can see close up better what's happening. Mitosis has just one division event, so it produces two cells. It doesn't reduce the ploidy. It doesn't involve any shuffling of DNA, so the two cells that result are genetically identical to each other and to the original cell. In meiosis, you have two division events. Meiosis one is when the ploidy gets reduced and the DNA gets mixed up because of crossing over that occurs during synapsis of prophase and because of independent assortment that occurs at metaphase one. Then after the first division, you still have the problem of having two sister chromatids in place. Those need to be split apart. That's why meiosis two is just like mitosis, and you end up with four haploid cells genetically distinct from each other. Yeah. Because this one still is. This is metaphase one. Still a diploid condition, right? Two number ones, two number twos, two number threes. These two cells now, each one has only one big, one medium, and one small. It's already haploid. Because one homologue went to one cell, and the other homologue that makes it diploid went to the other cell. Each of the two individual cells now only has one of each type of chromosome. Yep, see, there's three here. That's N. There are six here. That's 2N.
Don't they have
the chromatids don't... They're counted still as one chromosome, though. Two chromatids together. And that's why, like in mitosis, here you have an N of what? For this picture. No? What is the N on the mitosis cell? Three. N always means how many different kinds of chromosomes are there. There's a big, a small, and a medium. Right? But there's two of each, so this is a diploid cell. It's going to be called 2N only if there are two of every kind of chromosome. And this one has two big ones, two medium ones, two small ones. Once it divides, though, since we go from calling two sister chromatids stuck together, we call that one chromosome. When you split them apart and they're each called a chromosome, that means you now have twice the number of chromosomes, but it's in two different cells. So each individual cell has the same number of chromosomes as the original. That's not happening here in meiosis. Okay? So the ploidy reduction happens right here in meiosis one. Once you're already haploid, you just get rid of the extra chromatids into other cells by meiosis two. So notice here, three chromosomes, they're replicated chromosomes. Down here, you still have three chromosomes. These are unreplicated. That's what happens. Meiosis 2 takes you from replicated to unreplicated chromosomes, but it doesn't change the overall number of chromosomes. Everyone good on all that? Okay, well then, what you need to do is really just look at stuff. You have some slides to look at, but you also have your bead set, which I want you to use to go through these phases and talk it out. Make sure you understand why what you're representing chromosomes with actually does represent them in each of the phases. You have a magnetic part that holds these things together. What does the magnetic part represent in real life? No. The centromere. Yeah, the centromere is where the two chromatids are stuck together. So just remember, when there's two identical sister chromatids stuck together, we still call that whole thing one chromosome, but it's one replicated chromosome. All right, I'll let you do it now.